Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And some of the best stuff is when they aren't speaking at all. Like, that sex scene is kind of a tour de force of acting. Not just because, you know, Danai has to pretend to be attracted to Andy or Lincoln. I don't know. He's probably attractive to some people. But
Andrew Lincoln, not attractive. Okay.
I know. Right. I'm just trying to rile up the crowd. Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking season one. Well, there's only one season. Episode four of The Ones Who Live. Aaron, it's titled What We, which feels like half a title to me, because it is. We probably will talk in more detail next week when we complete the title of this, but what'd you think of What We?
Yeah, they're doing some fun little Easter eggs with the titles of the season here. Man, this is a tough one because you got like a shit sandwich, right? Which is like, it's presumably two pieces of good bread with like shit nestled in the middle. This is like, I guess, an open faced shit sandwich where it's like there's some shit at the bottom, but then you just got a whole bunch of mashed potatoes and gravy and choice cuts of beef on top. The whole framing device this episode about them like hurling themselves out of a helicopter and finding a post-apocalyptic, sustainable swank apartment community, I found really stupid. But it did allow Rick and Michonne to do some really excellent character work. I don't want to like praise it over much because it's essentially they're giving Rick Mr. Incredible's arc from The Incredibles. You know, he's just... Okay. Not strong enough to lose them again. You know, he's too afraid. Yeah. But it still resonates because I think it's true. And I think that that this is all goes down to Andy Denai's excellent work in the previous episodes. You know, they are as small a connection that we made to guys like Nat. I think there's enough that if you're like, okay, she spent a year with these people. Her quoting his wisdom didn't offend me too much, and I just think that this feels right. Rick had tried very hard to get away. This place beat it out of him. He found himself a new purpose. He had to let his family kind of die or continue in a state of undeath, and being violently confronted with the fact that, like, not only are they still alive, but oh my god, they might die. I got to get them out of here. I thought that was all really good, and I really enjoyed watching Rick and Michonne reconnect. I like Michonne's, waves of realization about Rick and his, the trauma, brainwashing, PTSD, whatever you want to call it. On balance, I think this is one of the most well-written and has some of the best dialogue I've seen in years from The Walking Dead. But you got to eat that open-faced shit sandwich. You got to just go with the bailing out the plane and swimming ashore in a hurricane and yeah. And then the end, maybe it's just a shit sandwich because the end is kind of unbelievable too.
But yeah, I was going to say, you remember, maybe it's a shit double down. You remember the KFC sandwich that was chicken ever instead of
sure.
bread? Yeah, it's
sure.
one of those where the shit is both the bread and the filling. No, I'm kidding. I'm kind of with you here. I think I was a little more annoyed by you, I guess, by the fact that this is sort of an episode-long argument that is broken up by random acts of violence. It's both simultaneously convoluted, but also the most straightforward storytelling that the people under Scott Gimple care to do. I found it just annoying that we kept stepping out of this argument to do other things. Like, have the argument, try and settle this thing. And I know, like, they didn't have time or whatever, but it's all artificial, right? Because it's this fiction, they could do whatever they want. I just found it to be a little tedious at points where I thought that we had breakthroughs and then no, we didn't have breakthroughs. And then by the end of the episode, you know, they're going to have a breakthrough, right? There's no chance that Rick just stays there and sacrifices himself and the Michonne is okay with it. So they had to come to this resolution one way or another. And it felt just like kind of the long way around, but
yeah, I suppose. I don't know what a Walking Dead episode is if you just have, because I, you know, Mr. Robot did that. There's a pretty famous episode that takes place during a storm that's like a five-act play. And that's what this felt like to me. And it really clicked when Gimple was talking in the post-credit behind-the-scenes bullshit about, you know, Denai, Miss Guerrera being a pretty talented playwright. I guess she's an award-winning playwright. She's written several plays, a couple telescripts, and this felt like a very conventional three-act structure, where, you know, you have like her laying out the attack and the argument, and then, you know, Rick pleading his side, and then like a synthesis. And each one, you know, they were like forced to go from set to set by the impending collapse of buildings. So it's like, I don't know. Like I said, I had more problem to set up, and the annoying thing about the setup too is like, I don't know why they did it. I don't know why The Walking Dead keeps doing this. Like, all they had to do is show the helipad, like the helicopter taking off and going over like the cliffs or like sweeping out to the ocean. And then we wouldn't be, because like my thought is they're on the West Coast. They're going back to Philly, I think. So they would just take off, turn around on a helicopter and go over land. I'm like, where the hell are they going to bail out where it's safe? If they had showed that, and I don't know why they don't do that. I don't know why they have like it's already a cliffhanger, them bailing into the ocean. What the hell are they going to do? But
right. Yeah. And it's, I don't know, in a post Mythbusters world, it's also hard for me to believe that this kind of jump from a helicopter into water is easily survivable. But I think
I counted it there. That's like a 50 to maybe 70 foot drop. I didn't, as long as they didn't hit a rock, I thought it'd probably be survivable. In terms of how long it took him from going from helicopter to splash.
Yeah, I suppose the way they filmed it in this episode, it didn't seem that high up. But also in the last episode, it seemed way higher up. So,
again, yeah, their setup fucks them. I don't understand why they do that.
It's just really messy. And I like, that's one way to get around it, right? Is to just make the first few seconds of this show completely unintelligible. Just have flashes of things, and then they end up in an apartment, and that's it.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's another thing, is they didn't really sell the struggle. Like, I could have used 5 minutes of them fighting through the ocean, trying to scale this cliff in the rain. Like,
yeah, a lot more of that, a lot less of the argument for me. But
yeah, and like, it also wasn't clear to me like why they stopped at the a swanky apartment. Like, the soon as you like that apartment turns out is like a whole flight of stairs down several hallways, and so like, why wouldn't they stop in any of the other places, you know, I guess, when they found like shelter? I don't know. I think there's things you could improve. And
yeah,
I wonder
go ahead.
I was just wondering, I wonder if Denai wrote this episode. It's like, here's the fight that I want Rick and Michonne to have. And then she gave it to Gimple, and Gimple's like, I gotcha. I got the perfect way to pull this off. And then he does his bullshit. So I don't know.
Sure.
That's the thing. It's like, it just felt like a self-contained, like they were writing to it. And if that's the case, they should have done a better job. But this individual episode, again, if you peel off the shitty bread from both ends, it's pretty spectacular. And again, they could have easily turned that shit bread to, at the very least, you know, like Atkins style carb-free bread. Like, yeah, it might not have tasted good, but it wouldn't have been actual shit. And maybe with a little bit more work, they could have gotten you some artisanal bread. But, you know, that, I guess that ship sailed a long time ago.
Yeah, I didn't think it was all bad, certainly. I mean, the acting here saves a large portion of this. I think, you know, both Denai and Andrew Lincoln are doing some very heavy lifting just with their acting skill. And it that's what manages to land it for me successfully without crashing into a building and blowing it up with rockets. Mm-hmm. I just think they both knocked out of the park. The despite the length of the argument and the sort of round and round we go kind of nature of it, I think that they were able to convey their positions effectively based on mostly the acting, because I think the dialogue in some places is really just kind of bad.
Really? Okay.
And in other places, it's just they took that bad dialogue and just nailed it.
And it doesn't
hurt.
And
some of the best stuff is when they aren't speaking at all. Like that sex scene is kind of a tour de force of acting, and not just because, you know, Danai has to pretend to be attracted to Andy or Lincoln. I don't know. He's probably attractive to some people. But
Andrew Lincoln not attractive. Okay.
I know. Right. I'm just trying to rile up the crowd. They do so much work there without saying much at all. And in ways that like Andrew Lincoln has not really had to do on this show. Like I recall the last time that he had a really truly emotional scene, and it was kind of played a little too over the top. Like I'm thinking of the death of Lori, right? When Carl comes back and he's like, I had to kill mom, and he, I know he's had more things, but that's the one that stands out in my mind. And it's way over the top. This is like, this is a guy who doesn't want to feel this emotion in this moment, but the situation is just pulling it out of him. It's wrenching it from him. It's like he describes it about his heart getting up, wrenching out of his chest and walking across, right? That he conveys that in that moment as well. And I think without those performances, this is a really just bad episode.
Yeah, and it doesn't hurt that they still have, I think, amazing chemistry. I've always, you know, thought that Danai and Andy looked good, acted well, played off each other well, had good physical chemistry, and I think that sells. Even if you want to say this material is subpar, I'm curious to explore that with you. I think they're just the relationship and how much they enjoy this process, I think shines through. Like, they do feel like this felt like an authentic married couple. This felt like, you know, a wife stumbling into her man with a secret family and just stunned that he won't leave, you know, except for a secret family. He's got a secret mission. But should we get to talking about that? Or do you got some more stuff?
One other thing I wanted to say is this episode directed by Michael Slovis. And if you recall that name, but it's fuzzy, he's a big director over on Breaking Bad. And so when I saw his name, I was sitting up paying attention. They're actually bringing in the big guns for this episode here. I think it paid off. The directing, I have no faults with the directing. It's all just in the writing.
Yeah, and Danai Gurira is the credited writer of this episode, so I think that
she probably
submitted a lot of it. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like she's got a successful writing career, and then I don't have.
But there's
any
always a gimp
trouble
behind the scenes pushing.
Well, yeah, the gimp.
Yeah,
put the gimp back in the box. You know, he's fine. He's fine where he's at.
All right, well, maybe we should get into the recap.
Let's do it.
Don't shamble away. We'll be right back. Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. the thrills of King's Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Hungry Ones will feast. We're back with The Watching Dead.
We start the episode with Rick and Michonne bailing out of the helicopter at low altitude off the west coast, managing to swim to shore and make their way to a still-functioning, self-sustaining eco-building where they get to have a timeout. Michonne learns just how beaten down Rick is and decides to leave him and go back to her kids before an attack helicopter interrupts them.
This was... surprisingly, the first episode that does not start with a 28 days before or
no,
it just this is straight follow up to what we saw in the last episode.
It rewinds just a little bit so they can get Tony Orlando on the sing about tying a yellow ribbon.
Does it? It's really hard to tell if it does because some of this because they blend the recap so seamlessly into the actual show. That it's really hard unless you go back and actually try and figure out which scenes were in the previous one to tell.
Sure. But the soundtrack, though, I did think that's the thing. I looked at that scene and the scene before, and it looked like they did play a trick with the perspective. So when they actually had the overhead shot of them bailing out, the water was a lot closer than it appeared. It seems like the helicopter might have been in distress anyway, since it apparently immediately
storm was buffing it.
Yeah, apparently it immediately wrecked as soon as they bailed out. We'll find that out later.
Yeah, two people jumping out one side shifted the weight so much that they just smashed into a building.
And I imagine, because I saw some of this discussion, that some people had a huge problem with the building, them just happening to find a building. I guess I didn't. I feel like, West Coast cliff, some eccentric billionaire starting some kind of like tech community where they're going and right at the turn of the zombie. That seems like, I mean, if you want to say, oh, what a coincidence, but like, I don't know, the Walking Dead comics are kind of full of coincidences that make the story better. So while I think, I don't know, maybe this would have been a little bit easier to swallow if they just washed ashore and went to some just rando, Portland or Washington, a town that didn't have a full, like if they were just in a huddled out in a bombed out building cooking over a fire, I think the episode would still be the same. But I don't know, Rick and Michonne wouldn't have looked as clean. They wouldn't have been able to have sex in a nice bed. So I didn't have a big problem finding a fully functional post-apocalyptic eco shelter.
Yeah, I didn't either, although I will say it's not as advanced as you think. I mean, that Windows pipe screensaver tells you all you need to know.
That was dated in the world fell 2010. Are we supposed to run a Windows 95 here? What the?
Right?
It's like Mr. Hammond sparing no expense in Jurassic Park. Nah, you were dumpster diving for those Windows licenses. I know.
What the hell is the thing in the sink? Is this some kind of rainwater collection system that
Yeah, there's that's the thing. I feel like there's a couple of connections that didn't quite get made, which is weird because this is a pretty indulgent episode, which could have been as long as they needed it to be. I don't think AMC gives a fuck. Like, I think you're supposed to understand when Michonne says they were still trying to innovate. They were still like after the they were still doing things to try to. And that looked to me like some kind of maybe water purification system.
Yeah, maybe coming from the ocean. Maybe it was desalination type stuff. Yeah, or maybe it's just rainwater.
So like you said, it might have come from a, you know, there's an alternate. Like if you're just washing your hands or something, you can use the rainwater. If you're drinking, you can use the building's water. But they don't explain it. So
they did a pretty good job of explaining without explaining how all this tech stuff could be working still after the fall this long and after its inhabitants were deceased as well. I think you can imagine, okay, there are some solar panels up on the roof that are collecting power, that are keeping all these smart systems running, and they're downtime when nobody's there in the room, and so they don't have to be running 24/7, so the batteries are charged. I can see it, right? That they do a much better job in this episode than they do in previous episodes telling the story through the environment. And I thought that was appreciated by me for sure.
I thought as a smart piece of tension, although they kind of disrupted it early, is having Rick's personal locator beacon be lost and Michonne's the one that's got it. So like he really wants to push the button, but she's the one that's got the button and she's making him explain. I really liked, watching Rick watch Michonne get undressed, and there's this like both
surprise. Big surprise.
Hey, the woman's got nice skin. She's got nice skin. And there's this kind of thing of like he's just for a minute like a man admiring his woman getting undressed, but then he sees like the scar and that fear. You can see the kind of fear start to claw at him again. I thought that was nice.
There's a lot of that kind of, you know, they have a really decent storytelling without exposition. Like I also got the sense that this is a lot like Michonne's house was back before the fall. And so this could be a sort of temptation to go live at the CRM with him, right? Just stay here with me. Or she's experiencing a taste of what he's experiencing. And so she's like, well, he's fallen. He's been seduced by this. This modern conveniences that they haven't had in a decade or more. Yeah, I thought that was pretty effective.
There's some, I know you said you're kind of critical of some of the dialogue, but I like some of it, like her picking up the Beverly Cleary book and talking about how it inspired her to be a creative writer. God. And then her, you've been doing a little creative writing too, that letter. You didn't like that?
I'm like, just have the argument. You don't have to have a segue into your argument. You don't need to look around this house for something to bring up the argument. Just tell him, look, Rick, I think you're fucking up here.
What kind of fucking arguments
do you have? Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein, and you really look like a fucking monster right now. And oh God.
See, this is what it's like to argue with a android. They just don't understand the human spirit, the human connection, making the connection and bringing it to where. And then when she's like, maybe you got to write another map, because I think that Danai is pretty vicious in a couple points where she's fighting their lives. So like, Geneva Conventions don't apply, but her being like, you lied to me and bringing it home. It's like, you're essentially forcing me to lie to our children. Like, what am I supposed to say? That their daddy, the brave man, sent me away because he was afraid he couldn't get,
And Rick later is going to just say some things that are unconscionable. Just like, I'm out here because I had no choice. You had a choice. Mm-hmm. And then that just, sets her off, which rightly so.
I like how Rick kind of flips out at the temperature control voice. It's like an Amazon Alexa or Google at Home that you can't turn off. And
well, this is how I felt about the entire episode. I kept saying, God damn it, just stop with the temperature control stuff. I'm in the middle of this argument. Let's have this argument. And Rick's feeling the same thing here. He's like, you're interrupting the discussion we're having. And I felt like the episode kept doing that.
It's like a waiter that doesn't get the vibe. Like, we're trying to hash some personal stuff out here. And like the fucking water, like, where are you when I actually want my glasses empty? This guy's checking on me every 30 seconds, make sure everything's okay.
Yeah.
we had that argument, or not an argument, but we pondered like what Grime 68 meant. And it turns out it was kind of the stupidest thing we thought it was going to be, which is the kill count, the record.
Is there, why do you say that? I must have missed this in the episode.
Because when he's talking about, like, you essentially did the opposite of everything I asked you to do. I told you to, you know, to lay low, and you beat the kill record. It was a litany of things you did. You built the kill record. You grabbed the RDIM. Like,
so there's an inference there that they paint the actual kill record up there.
I think so. It's super dumb, though, because it looks like a faded kill record at that. Like,
well, it's been a long time since the kill record's been broke.
Has it? I thought it was like a year ago.
I mean, Rick lost his hand. I don't know. It depends on how long it's been since Rick lost his hand, right? Because I think
it's been almost 8 years. So you're right. Like, maybe that was at was there a 4 year mark? Maybe they're suggesting that it was kind of like more in the middle. But I guess I was thinking the scene of him holding the knife to his throat was like more recently, like that's like him actually giving up, or I guess he refers to it as this like kind of metaphoric death in this episode. I figured out how to die and yet still live.
Yeah. Stuff was good.
And he's like, he makes a point. It's like, you know, he finally lays out to her the predicament they're in, Jadis. And, you know, saying you've seen what these people are capable of. Imagine Alexandria being chlorine bombed. And
her instincts just immediately are to do all the things that he's thought to try that can't happen. Yeah, no, totally. That's the right call, except she has thought of that and she's got a plan to prevent it.
But I kind of believe the thing is this is all moot in like 30 seconds. But like, I kind of believe that Rick and Michonne could figure out a way to get inside Jadis' apartment.
Yeah, I kind of want to see that. I want Jadis to die. I want Jadis to die at the hands, or his hand of Rick and the hands of Michonne.
Yeah.
I would love to see that. That would excite me way more than anything that they did over in the Commonwealth with their kind of, you know, under the covers sort of espionage thing they had going. So I'm a little disappointed that's not going to happen. But I don't know.
It's funny because I kept on in the early goings being like annoyed by like, I don't understand why Michonne is not getting this. And then this part is where I start to switch allegiance to Michonne, because when in the dawning light of day, just as Michonne hands him the personal locator beacon, he sees the wreckage of their helicopter smashed into, I think it's a part of the same building, like a different wing of the same building. You know, of course, Michonne's elated, thinking, oh, my God, you know, they're going to think that we all this is our get out of CRM free card. And Rick still says no, which is your first kind of.
Yeah, fate has presented him an opportunity and he is too scared to take it. And I think that was very effective.
Yeah,
that's good stuff.
So this is kind of like the second part of the debate or the argument of this. Second part of the first argument where she talks about, I thought this stuff was really emotionally devastating too. She talks about Nat and how you know how it ends. And she's now seeing this as a very fatalistic thing. And she said, your son, who you haven't asked about, which is kind of a twisting a knife in the gut, because you'd think, Rick would have all kinds of questions, but these are all theoretical people he's trying not to let back into his heart. So, but gives him the brave man speech and how Rick Jr. is calls himself the little brave man. Which this single scene gives Rick Jr. RJ more character development than the show's bothered to give him in like 5 years. So,
yeah, I don't know if we're there yet. But there's some things they say about RJ that I'm not so sure about. I don't know. I mean, it was nice to see Rick's reaction, because Rick does have a reaction when he finds out that he has a son, right? It's not like he isn't curious at all. He just, there's a lot of pressing stuff on his plate at the moment. And I feel like up until they spot the helicopter crash, the ultimate rebuttal to all of Michonne's arguments here is just to hold up his artificial hand.
Mm-hmm.
And say, this is the links I went to try and get back to you. And mm-hmm. it was not possible. It's still not possible. Yeah. And then, they show the helicopter and it's like, okay, now we have an option.
I think that's the brilliant thing about introducing the helicopter so early is it really peels back, that Rick is lying. If it was only about getting away. Although the other thing that on my second watch, I noticed in the intro scene, they have like a map of the United States with like Omaha and Portland and whatnot and the CRM. And then there's like a concentric line around the CRM where it's got like the CRM outskirts, and then the security corridor. And it looks like the security corridor would embrace Alexandria.
Huh.
So okay. I'm sure like that's the thing that I'm surprised they didn't mention is that fact of like, even without Jadis, I think Jadis's next move would be to bomb Alexandria anyway. Right. Yeah. Like just say, hey, on a routine patrol, we found this community living outside, it's like a potential threat. It's large enough to blah, blah, blah. Gas them.
Yeah, she doesn't have any chance of getting with Rick anymore. He's dead by her estimation. So, yeah, but why not? Right. I mean, Jadis is not a nice person. Jadis is a piece of shit. So, of course she would do that.
Yeah. But, and then she's like, Michonne just can't understand. And again, because he is lying, he's not really telling the truth that, he's given himself to this mission and now he just can't go back. And, she doesn't believe it. And he's like, why would you? Yeah, that the line she had about like, why would you stay in a prison if the door's open?
Mm-hmm.
That's like Rick's been institutionalized. He's like that old guy and
broken
in Shawshank Redemption, except for instead of killing himself, he metaphorically did and then dedicated the ghost of himself to some larger project than himself.
Yeah, no, it's we saw this to great effect in Game of Thrones, right? You have to bring this back to Reek. Theon Greyjoy, who I think was presented with that exact opportunity, right? He was given a means of escape. He did take it. It all ended up being a ruse, and he was right back where he was before, and that broke him even further. Now he's not even going to attempt an escape, which is much like Rick, right? He cut off his hand to try and get away. That didn't work. He's right back where he was. Now he's broken.
Yeah, there's no more hope. You don't have any more to give. And I think that's the thing. That's interesting that I think that Michonne doesn't realize now, because now she's just in the anger phase. She, can't believe what she's hearing. What are the odds that I've come across this whole fucking country to find him? He's alive. He's safe. He's relatively healthy. And he got a golden ticket to get out of here. And, he's just not doing it. He's not doing it. It really hurts her.
He's not him, right? I mean, she didn't find Rick. She didn't find the Rick that she remembered. She found the guy that's been broken. And I don't think that's quite sunk in yet. It takes this episode, and she gets really pissed off when she finally realizes it. But also, he's going to have a change of heart here. So, I don't know.
I did keep wondering, what if Daryl were here? What would Daryl be? Can you imagine Daryl listening to Rick say this shit in this jackboot thug uniform? Shit. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
We ain't them.
You ain't us. You ain't us. Anyway. She's finally said, you know what? I have found you. I fought for you. I've reasoned with you. I've pled with you. I'm going to go back to our kids. I left to find you. And she smashes an IKEA lamp and uses it to form a bow staff, takes out the front door of the apartment, and Rick stays. And I think this is another fine bit of acting of him being torn between his fear and the heart being wrenched out of his chest as he goes on. And what finally galvanizes into action. He decides to take out after her and then sees the helicopter coming, which gives him a sense of urgency.
Yeah. And everyone sitting there watching the show wants Rick to go after her, right?
Yes. You could feel all 0.9 million people watching with their heart in their throat, willing him to walk out that door.
It prompted me seeing Michonne break apart this lamp, and she uses various killing instruments during this episode. Her sword, gone for good.
It would have to be,
where would she
right?
get it back? Yeah.
Jadis?
The CRM? Yeah, maybe
like,
it's
we're
back.
Not done with the CRM, right? There's no way. There's no way.
I mean, we can't be.
So there's a couple things I take for granted.
To go back to Alexandria and then the CRM to show up.
I don't think they're going to go back to Alexandria. I don't think the show, show's budget can afford bringing back all those stars with years under contracts. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
like, who would they bring?
Right.
I wonder if they would. I wonder if they could play it with like Rick comes back and everyone's strangers except for Judith and RJ because Negan and Michonne are gone. Daryl and Carol are gone. So like you could have if you could swing Father Gabriel, if you could what is it, Seth?
He's dead, right?
Gillian.
Am I misremembering that?
Did Gabriel die?
I can't remember.
Rosita, I thought Rosita was the only
Rosita's
one.
Rosita's dead, definitely.
Yeah, Rosita's dead. So you get Eugene and Father Gabriel and Judith, sure. And you could have some kind of homecoming, and everybody else is just new faces.
Is Aaron still alive?
Yeah, I guess Aaron would be there too, but he could be off in a. I mean, you could.
Oh, imagine the
he's
stories.
Off visiting Seaside or whatever.
Yeah, but you got to have Aaron and Rick get together now that they're both missing arms. Right?
Compare notes on their dongers.
Does your stump itch like mine does, man? It's gotta tell you, ghost itches are really weird, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So the missile the helicopter fires missiles apparently to cover up the track of the other helicopter crashing, and this missile barrage disrupts and destabilizes the building. Forcing Rick and Michonne to team up just to survive. They discover the purpose of the building they're in after hiding in an exercise room, which gives Michonne new avenues to attack Rick's idea of reforming the CRM.
Yeah, some unfair, dirty fighting here from Rick. But before we get to that, the explosions. I was under the impression the large explosions drew walkers toward them. Based on what we saw with Nat, using extremely large explosions to draw thousands, millions maybe of walkers to these explosions. And yet, these explosions go off and these walkers just follow Rick and Michonne right into this building by the dozens.
Well, I don't know. I feel like if you have the explosion and you shake your juicy living ass in front of the zombies, they're going to chase the juicy ass.
Michonne was shaking it.
They're just
front
people
of those
after
walkers
all.
When Nat set off the explosions. I don't know, man. I don't know. Consistency has never been the strong point of this show. Just trying to hold them accountable.
But Michonne was pretty far away, and the explosions were big and purple. Zombies love purple.
That's true.
It's her favorite color.
Maybe it's not the explosion. It's the color. Yeah.
That's the last of their cones to give in their eyeballs. It's the ones that can see towards the ultraviolet spectrum. It's that purple, man. That's really vivid to them. Really attracts them.
That makes sense. Speaking of science, I saw a lot of 3D printers in here. And this is another thing where they did a pretty good job of telling me the story. Because like in 2010, which is kind of when the fall happens in the Walking Dead story, I feel like 3D printers were just on the cusp of becoming... home ones were just on the point of becoming like usable. And if these people are on the cutting edge of technology from the 2010s... That makes a certain amount of sense that they'd be using these.
I think so too. Yeah, I think so too. I really like the husband and wife bickering, you know, because like Rick clearly has had some actual military training now, so he's like talking about defensible positions and not being able to breach out, and she's like, well, commando, I'm not even armed, and she's like makes fun of his defensible positions, and he's like, commando, really? I thought that was that's not great, but like, you know, these kind of like petty fights usually aren't, and I just think Rick and Michonne sold it.
They find this character Lakshmi Patel, who is a scientist from Greenwood, trying to, you know, live off the grid for a sustainable tomorrow and push forward innovation. That innovation being mostly focused around methods of execution, headset connected to the circuit breaker. And just electrocute yourself to death? That's brutal.
I'm saying if I'm a scientist in some kind of fantastic future eco building and the best way I can find to kill myself is the electric chair, good Lord.
If I'm that scientist, I'm looking to Hotel Artemis myself at the end of this. I've got the 3D printers. Mm-hmm. I want to die. Just stick my head in one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that, like, because I was thinking, why wouldn't you poison yourself? But, like, I guess the consideration is you don't want to be a walker, so you got to do something that destroys the brain.
Sure.
These, like, maybe these scientists didn't believe in having guns, so they didn't have access to an easy way to kill yourself like that. So, I don't know. Maybe it's not as stupid as that. But my first thought is, like, why the fuck would you go into trouble to wire your brain into the mains?
Right.
So you can hit a button and fry and go with what is considered one of the most painful, gruesome ways to die. You know,
it certainly looks that way. Yeah. Did you kind of, I guess, believe what they were setting up here with this
Michonne throwing this in his face,
and especially how it all died? How this community Greenwood died. They speculate about maybe some crops that failed. If you look inside one of their rooms, they have sort of a grow op going, which I would assume is like, oh shit, we got to fix this crop problem ASAP.
I noticed all their fridges were empty, but like too empty, emptier than they'd be if like they were just cleaned out, you know?
Well, it's the Walking Dead problem. Explain to me where this building is situated.
Situated on the cliffs of the Pacific Ocean. Somewhere in Washington State.
Okay. So cliffs, you know, notoriously not great for growing things, mostly rock. At the bottom of those cliffs, there seems to be just a vast ocean, literal vast ocean of food. This is the same problem they had up in the stupid seaside community where everybody was saying, oh, Alexandrians are starving. We don't want to give them any of our fish.
Oh my God, you're right. How the hell do you starve when the Pacific Ocean is right there?
Right. How do you starve when you are literally next to a food supply that is endless in this world? Like, you can't talk about overfishing and shit because there aren't enough humans.
You can back convert a Nissan into a fucking hybrid, but you can't make a fish hook out of like a paperclip. And
yeah, it's absurd.
You know,
like, okay, so that can't be how they died. They can't be starvation.
Yeah. But the thing is they did sell a whole famine arc on The Walking Dead, and not only were they fishing from the beach, they had a whole fleet of fishing ships with nets and shit.
Yeah, they were specialized fishermen. Yeah. I don't know, man. So
I don't know. Maybe they've got sick eating fish. You know, like, I'd rather die.
So they'd rather die. Okay.
Could it be that they were like, okay, what if, because like, it's not beyond the realm of belief that these super eco-conscious people were vegans? Would it be that they just are not going to
die than
yeah, I mean, I could, I've certainly met many people who have claimed that they, you know, that this is like a moral thing. Like, they see eating animals as
like, but those people live in a first world country where they can sit down to a vegetable dinner anytime they want.
But those people could also survive into the apocalypse and have real beliefs. I mean, I don't know. It happens. But I'm trying because, like, I don't see how you can't, like, grow food with all the energy and resources you've got. Like, everyone mass starving, like, maybe you can't feed everybody, but...
Yeah.
But maybe it's also just, like, they just gave up. It's like, I don't think they're at the end of their rope. It's just that they saw the end of the rope and it was going to be really tough and... And honestly, this is where I was a little pissed because I thought, you know, we're going to spoil the ending of the episode, but I thought it was dumb that Rick and Michonne just ran to the first vehicle that they found, and it happened to be a retrofitted, you know, truck with all the gas needed and all the spare tires. I thought it'd been really cool if that note said that, you know, the last of us have rigged a vehicle to like try to find help, but we've all come to the conclusion that it's no use, or like it's something that like Rick and Michonne know to look for it, and so it's not just like, oh, we're just making a mad dash at the first vehicle and, oh look, it's the perfect thing that we need. Or if there was a garage full of vehicles that they had retroconfitted, just, I don't know. And they just didn't set, this is the perfect place to set those tracks, and they didn't. They just left it to be this massive coincidence.
Oh, this is what that ending is. What gives me hope that we are going to get to Alexandria, because that's a lot of damn fuel if you're driving a hybrid.
It is, but then like, what the fuck do you hire Terry Quinn to just be like this quasi bad guy for 5 minutes in two episodes? Are you just to sell season four, The World Beyond? Like, you're not going to finish this arc?
No. I think like the CRM is going to show up at Alexandria. That's the thing. So,
question, do you think that you're just going to drive to Alexandria? Like, we, you know,
yeah.
Like 2 weeks later is going to be the subtitle. Yeah. And my God.
Yeah, totally.
My God. I mean, I know you can make it across country. It seems like, but I wouldn't buy, like, how long do you think it would take to go across country in The Walking Dead with all the highway disruptions, with all the,
oh yeah,
you know, the bandits, the hordes of walkers you got to divert around? Like, it's not quite old school wagon. You know, like, it's not the Oregon Trail, but it ain't, you know, get on I-70 and bomb over either.
I imagine on the order of months.
I would think
so, my guess.
Too.
Yeah. It's something you could do in probably 5 days, four or five days on the open road in modern America.
You could probably make the drive in two, three days if you just went straight through.
But oh, yeah.
Especially
yeah,
two drivers. Through. Desperate to get back to the kids.
Sure.
So after they have this the whole thing about the sustainable community is allows Michonne to make a point about, wow, look what happens when people try to save the world on their own.
It's Jesus. Like, roll my eyes again.
I thought that was another book
I want to talk about.
It's this is the weakest, I think, argument, because like, you could easily make this argument against Alexandria.
Oh yeah. Easily. Now yeah. Alexandria so, has like, a fucking wooden windmill to like
right.
It's
right.
Not so, some like, super advanced utopia, but also they're trying to make progress. Yeah, they're kind of the same. They've got batteries.
Yeah. Things have gone bad in Alexandria too. Yeah. I get her point that like the CRM is evil, but I don't think she knows enough. I guess they're keeping him against the will. But that makes a lot of sense, you know? Like, we value our secrecy. We think that's the secret to our success, so you can't leave once you get here. You know? Like, we'll, like, maybe kill you or whatever if you decide you can't live under our authoritarian regime, but you can't leave. Like, that doesn't seem crazy. I mean, doesn't seem evil. But I guess the unprovoked bombing of civilians...
There's a lot of things in the apocalypse that maybe can't be judged by the same standards. Because in the standards of our world, that's prison.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, you can't hold people against their will anywhere.
No.
Yeah. In the apocalypse, I don't know. Maybe that's excusable. But yeah,
it's like everyone
wants other
into the prison, you know? Like, you know, it's like season three of The Walking Dead, they all voluntarily lived in a prison because it was a rockin' safe place to be.
However, you also, it'd be interesting if, you know, you put up a big facade over this prison and you thought it was a McDonald's and you go in and mm-hmm. suddenly you're in prison. That's kind of the circumstance Rick finds himself in.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I didn't know this was a prison when I went there.
You're listening to The Watching Dead. We'll be right back.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. Keep your head down. Welcome back to The Ones Who Live. So, at some point, Michonne gets upset because she makes this big impassioned plea, and he says, that's why you should go. Because she said, you know, you keep lying to me how I live with myself if I get back to my kids, and God forbid something's happened. He's like, well, that's why you should leave. And then she's like, the man that I know would have never talked to me like that. And Rick's like, okay, whatever, we got to get out of here. So he grabs a weight bench pad, I guess, and she grabs a piece of rebar. I don't know why she can't use like a fucking barbell or something, but there's rebar in this workout room. And they bust out. They escape the exercise room. They try to get a part of the building that's still stable. Unfortunately, as they're going up a stairway, Michonne gets pinned underneath this very gaudy chandelier that collapses in the stairwell. And pins her.
Yeah, because they're not working together. Like, they're not simpatico. They're not in sync here.
Bickering. Yeah,
it's
fighting.
It's evidenced by how poorly they're fighting together, you know? Mm-hmm. Getting in each other's way. They're not supporting each other the way they typically do. I thought that was nice, like how they're showing
and
physically
funny.
How they're so far apart on this, yeah.
Yeah, like she goes to impale one zombie through the left eye socket with a rebar as Rick uses his donger knife to put him into the right eye. And she's like, I got this. And he's like, I got this. And when he pulls his knife away, it splashes blood on her face. She's like, really?
Yeah, that's pretty good. Why is the lighting so crazy in this place? Like, it's flashing purples and blues and greens.
Yeah,
it's...
they installed RGB lighting, and that's the default option. Rick just hits a switch,
disco.
And it's fucking rave mode. It's like the inside of a teenager's computer case. It's I don't know what's
silly.
Going on. It did look, but I guess it's like it did make it visually interesting.
Well, that's always the excuse for The Walking Dead, right? Whoa, it made it cool, or it made it visually interesting. Yeah, but it makes
right.
no fucking sense.
But I, you know, you're right. But if it makes it look cool, at least that's something. Sometimes they do stuff that doesn't make sense just because they're stupid. So this is an intentional stupidity. I say that's an improvement.
Yeah, still Rick won't leave Michonne, right? She gets pinned under this thing and she's telling him go, which I think is ironic given what he has just told her. You need to go and leave me here. He refuses. I'll never do that. Now, boy. I mean, that's what they're trying to get at here, right? Is that Rick is being a huge hypocrite because he would never actually leave her given the opportunity or choice.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing. It's like I do like this part of the setup is I think they have very good reasons. This feels like a couple who are at a loggerheads. And sometimes that happens in long relationships. Like you just want or you fear or you need different things and there's no reconciliation. And I was kind of like... Mm-hmm. I was like halfway at this point in the episode, I'm like, I wonder if they are going to like split up, like this is going to end badly somehow.
Yeah, they could,
because
that
would certainly. Yeah. Like if they've grown apart, you know, and like I've let you guys die and I don't want to go back anymore. And it's dangerous and it's stupid. And Michonne, who is like never gone against this, you know, because Rick's like this unstoppable force meeting in an unmovable object at the CRM. He's just one guy. Alone, he can't do anything against a 200,000 strong helicopter armed wing of the CRM. And Michonne doesn't get that. She's like, oh, well, you know, she hasn't even seen the Commonwealth. She thinks this is just, but she has seen it though. Like that scene of her on top of the cargo container, I'm surprised she isn't more sympathetic to, you know, or coming up with ways. Cause like Rick comes like, what are we going to do? Hide of everyone in Alexandria? We're all going to go into hiding? Like, what if Jadis just decides to, like, you know, eliminate some loose ends?
Yeah, and I think that's where we're not completely scot-free from this thing either, because I do think Jadis is shitty, and she'd probably be willing to go blow up Alexandria regardless.
Sure.
So I Rick never really brings that up, that even if we're presumed dead, Jadis is still going to do her thing, so I got to go back so we're not presumed dead. It's,
I don't even know if the writers are thinking that way. They might be thinking,
yeah, maybe
this
they
is
have
tidy.
A different opinion
this
of
is tidy.
Her.
Or just like,
and
why?
It is, right?
Just, yeah.
It is if Jadis isn't a vengeful shitbag, but I think she is.
Not only vengeful shit, but like, I think she's capable. She thinks that Michonne and Rick are capable of anything. Like, what if they did this?
True.
Rick can, you know, pilot a helicopter. Like, I don't know. It seems maybe far-fetched. But I still think that, like, if she really wanted to, like, what if one of them survived? They're not going in there and checking bodies. They're not counting bodies. I kind of thought they were going to do that, that was... You know, that there's some way that they're going to investigate and find out that Rick and Michonne are missing, and then the hunt was going to be on. But when they just missiled it, went right to the missile attack, like, well, guess not.
Yeah, there isn't really any way to tell at that point.
Jesus, what is the paperwork on losing a helicopter in a zombie apocalypse? It's not like there's a factory in Dearborn, Michigan, rolling these things off the I mean, these are literally irreplaceable.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to be the I guess go down with the ship. If you're losing your chopper, make sure you don't survive it.
But on the other hand, I also, there's got to be a piss pot full of Apaches and Blackhawks everywhere around the United States. If you're a military person, you know where those bases are. I bet you could fly, like, you know, you take a couple Blackhawks, fly a maintenance team out there, and you can probably get all the spare parts and maybe even airframes. Maybe it's not as hard as I'm thinking.
Yeah, could be.
Because there's just a lot of military equipment in these United States that's not going to be useful for really anybody in the apocalypse other than trained military personnel. So they finally, I mean, yeah, the whole point of the scene is to have Rick realize that he's asking Michonne something that she could never do herself or himself. Mm-hmm. And Rick and Michonne fight their way back to the swanky automated apartment where they're able to...
Accidentally. They just end up back there like, oh, damn, what? We're right back here, which feels like the circular argument that's happening too. So
it could be. I wondered if it was a different apartment, like, you know, that they're all just like matching suites for the scientists to stay in. This is a different wing, but whatever. It looks the same. They're able to, in the swanky apartment, make love, catch up on the lives they've been missing. And we can discuss this scene right up until the building starts to rumble again, because it's a long argument, and I think it's too much to break down.
A little sexual healing. I like this scene a lot. I think the acting here is pretty outstanding. They say without saying everything that they're feeling. You know, Rick is just... He can't... It's weird because he's like reconnecting with Michonne, but also that reconnecting is sort of forcing him to think about the death he's going to have to die again once she's gone. And he hasn't. So I thought maybe in this scene that he had changed his mind, that this was him, you know, coming back over to her side and realizing I might be dooming all of my people to death, but I got to take this chance because I can't be away from my family. But it wasn't. It felt like him being sort of resurrected for a moment and realizing I'm gonna have to feel this again.
It's a persuasive argument. Rick's like, you don't know what it's like out there, and she's like, you've forgotten what it's like in here. And that carries the day. I did think that Andrew Lincoln acted out the weirdest on-screen orgasm I think I've ever seen.
Oh, see, I didn't read it that way. That was emotional blockage happening. Yeah.
Oh, yeah? He's emotionally blocked? I thought
it
was more of a physical release. But
that could be. It could be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the things go hand in hand.
But now he's coming. He's like literally coming back to her. Like, you can, you know, see that this soldier facade is starting to like break down, and you know, Rick, married man and father, is starting to reassert, starting to come back from the dead.
Yeah, but he's still, I guess, master of his domain there, because the I guess afterglow is all of them discussing like, hey, are we going to go back? And he says, no, I'm definitely still not going back. So it's not like a full breakthrough here.
But I do appreciate the writing, because like, you can tell that he's starting to come back because he's starting to ask about RJ. He's interested. He's curious. What does he look like? Does he look like me? What does
he
act like?
Bullshit he looks like. Bullshit he looks like, Rick. Are you kidding me with this shit?
I don't even know what he looks like.
The only difference is the light brown skin. No, get fucked.
I've seen 15 seconds of this kid on screen over 3 years. I don't even know what he looks like. I've got like a kind of a pretty, yeah, like light brown skin, kind of curly hair. I couldn't tell you what
he
eye
looks
color,
more like
what
Aaron
face shape.
Than Rick.
Oh.
Like, I'm not saying
that's
anything happened,
scandalous.
But he looks more like Aaron
scandalous.
Than Rick. Like, come scandalous. On, man. You're not fooling anybody just by saying. That's the thing. The Walking Dead just says shit that's blatantly untrue and expects the audience to go with it. No, right. He doesn't look like Rick. Also, a Roomba explains why the shelves and the countertops are so dust-free, why there's no rust on anything. A Roomba can do all that shit. I bought the wrong Roomba back in 2010.
Well,
man.
See, they've modified it with like magnetic feet that can walk up walls and get on surfaces okay. and deploy Comet Cleanser and scrub and.
Uh-huh,
I mean, I was trying to, because like, I guess that's a sketch to why this is a pristine looking apartment. And like, you can be like, well, it's got really like 99.99% HEPA filters mm-hmm. and there's just no. And I've heard this is a disgusting fact. I fact check me on this. I don't know if it's true, but it's a factoid
going.
I've heard that like up to 90% of dust is human dander. It's just dead skin yeah. and like the bodies of the fucking mites that live all over us. Like,
and
it's
90%
gross.
Of that
gross.
Comes from armpits and butts.
That could be a true stat. I don't know about that, but so
no,
it's like, I
too.
Guess if there's no one living in there and you have a Roomba, yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
I don't know, man. Those walkers in the labs looked pretty dusty. The guy that electrocuted or the woman who electrocuted herself looked pretty crunchy.
Talitha fact-checked me in real time. She says, according to Wikipedia, dust in homes is composed of up to 20 to 50% dead skin cells. So
right,
it
so
should still be
50%
dust. Dust just from the yeah. ceiling flaking off slowly over time, I guess.
That's the thing. Feels like a half measure there, but what are you going to do?
Yeah,
I think it's funnier that they stay in this collapsing building to have sex for like 5 hours.
Well, they it's not shaking right now, you know, it's stable enough.
Before they had sex, he was all like, we got to get out of here. The building's coming down. We got to get out of here. We got to move. And then fast forward however many hours until the sun has come up and it's daylight
yeah.
and they've just packed up and left.
When they get to this room, he observes this part of the building is still stable. So I guess like until it starts rumbling, he's pretty chill to sit there and pillow with his wife, which, hey, man, I get it. But I like how they talk about this place is so well equipped, so advanced, so prepared to, you know, handle almost any disaster, and it's still fallen. And this brings him back to the CRM project, which is, you know, I think a pretty strong argument, because Michonne's not even, she's like kind of like, hey, you know what, Rick, it turns out Alexander's almost collapsed 4 times since you've left. Hell,
yeah.
One of them I'm not even aware of, you know, happened after I left. So, but he's talking about like, this is a chance to really build something. You know, sometimes you have to burn something down to rebuild it. He's, you know, preaching
Which
the gospel
still
before here. And she does. Yeah. She sees that like you're still, she's more, much more gentle, much more understanding and tender, but she kisses him and says, you're still lying to me.
Mm hmm.
And then they talk about the Scars episode. You remember that? Where Tara from True Blood had a whole colony of feral children that she was training as killers.
Yep.
And do you remember the Scars? Mm-hmm. Where they'd brand survivors just to harden them. And then Michonne had to kill so many children.
Many
with her katana. With her katana.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why she doesn't want to talk about it. It's pretty... Because he'd be like, I ain't going back. I ain't fucking going back. If I got to go back in a world where I got to slaughter children to live, I ain't coming back.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
she says, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, and then he opens up about his real reasons, but he's had something before that.
Just that, you know, I did think that the Rick Stump work was really nice. Like when Andrew Lincoln puts on that shirt, like, yeah, it's probably the easiest thing in the world at this point. They did it with Lieutenant Dan 30 years ago, but it's pretty convincing. Pretty convincing stump work.
Yeah, for sure.
And she makes this point that, like, you know, she's talking about she's never stopped believing, even though she had to abandon the search for Rick after her pregnancy was over. and she observes the stump as a sign that he did something to get away from these people, that you're trying to come home. You're still trying to come home. I can tell because you've had that beacon that you could hit at any time, mm-hmm. and you haven't. So the building, and she says you're also stuck now because you say you can't go home, but I think you can't go back. And mm-hmm. the building starts rumbling. It's nearly ready to collapse. Rick wants to take off, but Michonne makes a life or death ultimatum. She's not leaving here until Rick is honest with her about why he doesn't want to come back to his family.
Mm-hmm. And he is honest with her, I think, at this point. He says he's already died. Because they took the most precious thing from him, which was Carl. Judith doesn't get a single mention in this entire scene, so that's nice.
Well, he doesn't
care about his daughter.
The most important to least important. So Carl's most important. Then we're establishing a pecking order. You know.
Yeah, I could see Carl, but then I couldn't see him. And then I had dreams about you, and then you were gone too. And all I could see was Lori, and I lost my damn mind.
She started calling me on the phone again. So then yeah. I saw Judith, but all I could see is her lying in that fucking cooler.
And then I saw Daryl. Yeah. And it was all over for me. Couldn't go back.
Yeah. Yeah. Daryl just being a wildcat in a pit where I had a pit fight with Daryl before I left.
In all seriousness, this is a very good scene. Yes. And Andrew Lincoln absolutely brings every ounce of emotion he needs to. I don't see it too often from him. And like I said, this was like the most believable I've seen him in a scene like this, where mm-hmm. he feels extremely
conflicted. He wasn't doing too
conflicted.
Much.
Yeah, not too much, but you can still tell he feels deeply about this. Yeah, it was pretty affecting.
I thought
and then
so
she gives
too.
Him back Carl. I think that's
okay.
I don't think that completely works, but I do like it as kind of the culmination of her search for him and finding him in this moment and giving him back a thing that he thought he had lost. And look, I know it's some cartoonist who barely understands what Carl looks like. It's really all about the hat. But I don't know. It worked for me. It really did.
Honestly, yeah. Because, you know, if you're a longtime fan of our coverage, you know that the thing that really spoke to me in throughout the run of the prime of The Walking Dead was like the promise of Rick and Carl's relationship you know, looking forward to one day where Rick was going to be Carl, like that was, I guess, the intention in the comics is to have like this kind of Prince Valiant situation where you'd understand that Carl's the hero of the story in the full sweep of time. We didn't get that, obviously, because AMC is a bunch of cheap, heartless bastards.
The CRM of AMC took that from us and they replied, all we could see in our dreams was Eugene biting our dick.
Yeah, and all we're stuck with right hand rubber dildo arms, and we're the poorer for it. Can't drive a stick anymore.
Yep.
I also wonder where the fuck did she get that phone? Like,
she's
that's the one
in
thing
her pocket.
That
yeah
that survived the prison pocket. Like, because you know,
she wasn't a prison for a while.
She completely stripped out of those clothes, left them on the floor. I wonder if this is literally the same apartment they were in, but. Whatever.
That is wild, though, right? Like, she's on a helicopter ride from the CRM to go to this outpost, and they let her have her phone. She's been captured. They let her have her phone. Do they not know that there are people inside the city, this guy inside the city making these exact sketches? Would this not be strange that she comes in with this phone?
Well, I wondered if she actually bought it from him, like after she had that scene. That's what I think, because he's always saying they never could get Carl, because that's the one he can never get right. So, like, that was...
So she, from her memory of Carl, perfected it? Rick, his own son, couldn't describe. He just didn't have the words.
I'm just telling you
He's
what
just
I
not
think
a playwright.
Happened. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He just got no way of words. They all look like, all right. Honestly, this is Carl, Michonne, and Judith all look the same, just that Carl's got the hat, and Michonne's
Rick
got
never
the headband.
Rick forgot about the hat, never mentioned it, and that just broke all together.
Something works. He needs to have a big hole in his head. Can you draw him with his head kind of caved in?
Can you
just
give him
a gaping
sick...
hole where an eye should be?
can you give him 5 pounds of pudding? Give him 5 pounds of pudding and a big old spoon.
Yeah, yeah.
maybe a big can of dog food. I don't know. I forget what
That's the red line for Rick Grimes. He ain't eating no fucking dog food. He'll shit blind eating pudding, but he won't eat dog food. It's not good enough for Alexandrians.
But I
like this because like also it everything kind of clicked into place. Like, what were those weird dreams about Michonne? That was Rick's way of keeping him her alive, and there's constantly reimagining ways that he's met her, and they're falling in love in different ways. That was like the kind of, and like when that started going away, that's when I presume that's where he had the knife to his neck, and he quote unquote found a way to die and keep living. I thought that was a pretty good turn of phrase too.
And the other way to read these dream sequences is this is him actively forgetting Michonne. This is him mm-hmm. like, shit, I can't remember how I met her. I can't remember how we fell in love.
Ooh.
I can't remember any of that, you know? It's kind of horrific when you look back at it. It's not actually sweet. These dreams are him being away from her for so long and being mm-hmm. tortured so much that he can't even remember how they got together. So he's fabricating park bench meetings, and it's wild.
The memories are slipping away, and I bet like after a few years, like the dreams and reality start merging, and it's like, God, how did that happen? You know, like there's a couple things in my life I've told the story so much about that I don't even remember how it really happened, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was pretty good, and she hits him with, this is such a great, like, this is a great therapeutic technique too. If you're ever being hard on yourself, it's like, you know, how would you talk to in the same situation to your own child? And she flips that on him with, like, you know, here's the phone with the ridiculous picture of Carl. I do wonder why they made this guy such a shitty artist. Like, honestly, I feel like a real artist could have done some stuff with some cross hat shading and some mm-hmm. you know, sandpaper frosting, and done some stuff, and it just I don't know. I thought it was real weird that they just, because when she hands over this picture, it's almost like if you and I did a skit to show like how bad the picture is, like this mm-hmm, inset, mm-hmm. it's just ridiculous. And she's like, what would Carl say if he knew you were having this dilemma of whether you want to stay with this fascist regime to make, and she lays out all the maybes, like you're going to try mm-hmm. to change so that you might be able to fix to keep us safe. And so the future might, like all these, and you got a sure thing, which is me and the family and your community. So
yeah, and then it'll be wiped off the face of the map.
Yeah, but, and that he just like I get that like once you've made that decision of like I'm never going to see these people again, but you know what, they're safe and they're happy, and I'll always know that in my heart because no one can tell me otherwise. And I've got, that's like almost like a form of heaven for Rick. And now that he's having to deal with the reality of like they're here and they're real and they might die and they're in threat, like it's clearly sent him to a tailspin. And that's aside from all the other like brainwashing and trauma they put him through. So
mm-hmm.
She says that I finally realized my purpose, which is despite all the odds and years, I found you. I came through hell just to take you home so that we can go home and figure out how to protect it together and love on each other as hard as we can while we can, which is kind of the Walking Dead's thesis in a nutshell.
Yeah, that dialogue. So a lot of that dialogue feels stilted, but whatever.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. I'm curious to see what the broader populace thinks.
Yeah.
Rick and Michonne escape the crumbling building, resolve to stay together, and they find a truck that's been converted to an electric hybrid with enough ethanol and supplies to get them all the way across the country. They escape ready to make the whole damn world theirs.
Yeah, this is where like my complaints about how long did they stay in this building? Because it's nighttime when she hands him the picture of Carl and the building starts shaking. It's dark as shit.
And it was dawn,
it's candle
dawn
room or whatever.
It was pitch black when they jumped out of the airplane.
Mm-hmm.
It was dawn when Rick saw the helicopter. So I think they've stayed there for literally 24 hours plus or minus 3 hours, probably plus 3 hours.
The building starts shaking and they're like, we got to get out of here. And then smash cut to, it's bright. It's like maybe midday.
Mm.
and their backpacks are full and they're heading out. I hope they were looting, like, oh, we need vital supplies. Like, we have to find food in this place, which I don't know how you do that in a community that's apparently starved to death, but I hope they were finding vital supplies, because if not, they stayed in that building way too long.
You can go weeks without food. They'll scavenge it on the way.
Yeah, hopefully.
To see Rick beating rabbits to death with his giant whammer. I thought it was like eye-rollingly stupid that they run to the first vehicle apparently, and it's like an electric with a shifter, which that's an interesting idea, I guess. Maybe increase the mechanical efficiency, and it's a high, they've reconverted
a hybrid
and it's got. But I felt they could have set that up, like the expectation to, you know, like, why are they running right to that one? There was no like, oh, what's this car? What this car? Oh, this one, you know. I like that Rick gets in and he realizes it's a stick and he can't drive it because he's got no right hand. But I'm like, this motherfucker pilots a helicopter. No. I thought it's his right hand that he lost.
I'm pretty sure it's his left hand that he lost.
But why the fuck can't he drive stick?
Because he can't hold the wheel at the same time. Or maybe he just doesn't know how to drive stick. That's okay.
There's no
fucking
way.
Rick doesn't know how to drive a stick shift.
That Rick has never driven shift in this show. I bet there's like at least three examples of him driving a stick in this show. There's no way.
No, he hasn't done it. He can't do it.
I thought it was the hand thing, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of clever. Yeah. But if it's left hand, then like, what the hell is this?
And there's no traffic. How often are you really gonna have to shift? You can't reach over there, shift, and then put your hand back on the wheel.
Plus, like, how, like, most shifts on, like, these light, essentially, civilian vehicles are not, you know, you don't have to, like, grab and, like, just put a bunch of, you know, I frequently shift with just, like, my, you know, like, the, I guess, your wrist laying on it. That's all he's got. So just...
Or drive with your wrist. I mean, yeah, it's, you don't need a whole ass hand, a whole ass two hands to drive a car.
Or have machine shift for you.
Yeah.
But it's cute having them do the hot swap seat thing and kind of giggle about it and... You know,
and they're
now
making
that
out
they're together,
halfway while they're making the swap. And Michonne's like, I got to drive this out of here, man. They're coming.
Rick's stick needs to be shifted. And she's like, we don't got time for this. And I like him. I like him hitting her with the dream quote, the Michonne dream quote. We can make this whole damn world ours if we want to. And I also like the feudal Roomba. This Roomba trying to desperately sweep up the room as it's collapsing. That was, you know, kind of cute. And. And they're driving away this hopeful, upbeat kind of music. I couldn't help but notice that they told the story of this truck having everything they need. Like in the back, it's got several spare tires. It's got a bank of spare batteries, like a backup generator. Of course, that might be part of the electric conversion. I don't know. But they're telling us a story that this thing is a lifeboat that can take us all the way to Alexandria, which you think they're going to do.
Yeah,
in the cold
next
open
week.
next week. Okay.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be like them jumping out of the helicopter. It's gonna be a flash of the woods. It's gonna be a flash of like pine trees, and then like maple trees, and then it'll just be flashes of several different types of trees, telling us they're getting closer to the East Coast.
If they don't, I don't know how they do the CRM stuff unless they are going to do another miniseries. But I don't really think they do. I feel like this is the one shot they've got to.
Yeah.
So it would be hilarious.
I mean, World Beyond deals with that, so maybe that's their outlet for the CRM.
It would be hilarious in what was one of the cities that Joel and Ellie stopped by in The Last of Us? Like Omaha, I can't remember which one. The one that was it was Pittsburgh in the game. But it'd be funny if like they should establish that like Michonne and Rick are driving through like Jackson or Pittsburgh or whatever, and you see like someone that looks like Pedro and Bella like walking on the opposite direction, and there's no just kind of pass like two ships passing in the night. That would be something a very confident, mature, secure show would pull off to salute their much, much, much better version of itself, but. We'll see.
Yeah.
That's the episode, Jim. I presume we have feedback.
We do.
Well, let's initiate the feedback sequence. TWD at Walking Dead. No, scratch that. TWD at baldmove.com is how you send us feedback. Don't forget, you can follow along with what we're doing at Bald Move on all the social medias. Finally, if you'd like to support what we're doing here at Bald Move, we would love to have that support. And you can get ad-free feeds and tons of bonus content yourself. Check it out at support.baldmove.com. All right, TWD at baldmove.com. Jim, what do we got?
Has anybody seen Michonne? We'll be right back.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcasts, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. Has anyone spotted Rick? We're back with the ones who live. Oh, we got John in Chicago writing in saying, I liked the first episode very much. But since then, each episode has been getting worse and worse. This episode 4 was one of the worst The Walking Dead episodes since Michonne and Rick spent an entire episode looking for ammo for Negan, only to realize how much they love each other. This episode 4 did nothing to advance the story, other than they had an out, which was figured out in the beginning of the episode. We already knew they were in love. We're going to escape together, so why spend an entire episode on this? They already teased out a Stockholm Syndrome in the second and third episodes. Why spend an entire episode on an angle that could easily be overcome in one sentence, other than for actors to flex their acting chops? I'm hoping in the next two episodes they can finish strong, and we can see a reunion with Rick's kids and whoever else is left. Maybe a reunion with Morgan, which was teased in Fear the Walking Dead. Oh, really?
Hmm.
I mean, yeah, some people are going to not like this episode. For sure. I do think there's some tedium to it. Only in the bear can they get away, really, with an entire episode of arguments. See fishes for that episode.
That's what you're there for, yeah.
Yeah, because that's what that show is. But, yeah, I understand why some people might not like it. I'm split on it, but I'm like 70-30 good, bad.
And I just think that, like, I disagree. They needed a whole episode to, because they had to. My whole question is, like,
why didn't Rick get, come back? Why didn't he come over? Why didn't he get away? And why did Michonne leave her kids to chase a Slim Hope after him? And I needed some answers. I needed to show the grapple with that. And I feel like with Rick being gone for seven, almost 8 years, they needed to devote an episode for them to deal with that, you know, to deal with the conflict, to deal with the cognitive dissonance that Michonne's feeling. And also, like, this isn't Rick. Yo, no, you're right. You're right. Imagine if Daryl had Easy Street for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was a pretty profound change to his character and a pretty blow. And he just endured that for a couple of months, you know? The idea that, like, no, the strongest person can get this learned helplessness, you know? Like, if you spend years as a prisoner of war, if you are constantly tortured and broke down, like, no matter how strong you are, every person's got a limit. And I like exploring that with Rick Grimes and have the love of his life be able to rekindle that. Honestly, this is unrealistic for how easily she's able to, you know, win him over to her side. I want to believe, because it's Michonne and it's Rick. And I don't think any person could do this. I don't think Daryl could do this. I think, like, yeah, like, Michonne might be the only person on the planet that could have done this kind of rapid deconversion of Rick, but she's able to do it. And if they gave it any less time, it's like, why even bother bringing them back together if you're not going to explore these issues? And as dumb as I think some of the setup and some of the situations that they use to get them to have these conversations themselves felt like, yeah, stuff that... you know, that's something that we know from, we haven't talked about in a while, but like, one thing I got back when we were doing this, the convention junket, and interviewing and talking to the actors, is that they had rich interior lives of their characters that rarely made it to the screen. And yeah, I think that's why you got these excellent performances, because they get this and they're like, why the fuck are we doing or saying any of this shit? And they would spin up these stories and workshop, you know, like I saw one of Melissa McBride and Chad Coleman where they're talking about, you know, when they got split up and the whole look at the flowers. And I'm like, man, if 20% of this had made it to the screen, this would have been a whole better show. So mm-hmm. This, I believe, is what Denai Guerrera has kind of been like workshopping in a notebook, and you know, when she was on the show and since she's left, you know, it did feel like someone who really cares about the characters and their interiors and wanted to get that out. And it's not something The Walking Dead indulges very often, so I liked it.
Yeah, I do think the biggest complaint I have really about it is the structure of the season. I think it maybe needed a little more time to breathe, because I think it was a mistake to have them reunited so quickly. Because part of the thing I want to feel here is real struggle from both of them. Because I want, in this moment, to feel like Michonne has been to hell and back looking for him. And giving me a montage of her doing push-ups doesn't really feel like the hell that I wanted to see. You needed a couple more episodes for that. Rick's hell, I guess I felt slightly more, because it was a better episode in general, but like,
plus we have all
I just wanted
Rick
more
to
time
play off of.
Yeah, I guess I wanted more time to feel like they were desperately searching for each other, and more time for them to like come together at the end and have this conversation. Like, this feels like a conversation that needed to happen later in the season, or like right when they found each other. And that needed to happen a lot later.
Didn't
like this delayed third episode. This third episode really pushed things in a weird direction for me. I think I wanted this to be like episode 6 of a 10 episode season. And in the same episode, they found each other again.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Because I had to see that introducing as many problems and fucking with fan expectation. Can you imagine, like, if Rick and Michonne don't meet until the last episode?
Well, I'm not saying like, the last episode. I'm saying 10-episode season, have them in episode 6, meet up, have this conversation, hash all this out just immediately. Don't have this weird Twilight episode where they're, like, kind of on the same plan, but not really, and Michonne has to discover that. Just have her be astonished that he won't come back with her immediately.
The big flaw, I think, is I wish
that they had done Michonne's last season over. Like, when she went wandering, I wish she'd just immediately met up with Nat's crew and we'd spent that half season with her in a completely parallel story, getting to know...
Sure, they could have done that too.
...the wagon people, building up Nat, and then, you know, that would have stuff would have been a lot more, in I think, impactful if they had done... But, like, what do you got to do? Go back to season 10 and unfuck things from 4 years ago?
Yeah, you can't do that, yeah. Obviously.
He did have a... I saw John had a hot take here at the end. He says, Dead City is easily the best of the three post The Walking Dead spinoffs, and I think you guys didn't watch that one. That is, I think, considered a super hot take from... Like, nah, I haven't seen it,
I have no idea.
I have seen Daryl, and I am, like, you know, 66.6% through The Ones Who Live. But, like, I heard that the Dead City is kind of a turd and kind of a pointless one at that. But, again, I don't know. I haven't seen it. I'm sure I will at some point, though.
Yeah.
Let's move on to JP, who says, I hate this version of Rick. I understand wanting to do something different with him, but making him this extreme version of a subjugated Rick is just not Rick. I assume the arc here is Rick becoming Rick. I'm saying Rick a lot. Rick. It doesn't even sound like a real word anymore. The Rick is becoming Rick again, but those writers are not up to a PTSD story. They're trying to Theon Greyjoy Rick in 4 when it took GOT, a Game of Thrones 4 seasons. I just want to see Rick for 6 episodes, not just as a finale when he finally remembers who he is, which leads me to my main question. Where does this end? Is it genuinely the end of these actors in The Walking Dead? If so, they end without a reunion with the originals, or at least some, i.e. Daryl and Carol, or kill them off without them. It all seems so unsatisfying, especially when Daryl's entire plot is searching for Rick. Or is this not a standalone and we have a season 2? I haven't heard you discuss DD season 2. Oh, Daryl Dixon season 2, which has been subtitled The Book of Carol. It's not clear from the trailer if Daryl is even a regular in it. Interested in your take on this. All right, first take. Where are they going with this? Like, you know, we can agree or disagree about the Rick trauma thing. Where do you see this going? Where do you see the end state of this?
I feel like it's an end to Alexandria, and these characters from The Walking Dead. They might, you know, randomly find their way onto other Walking Dead spinoffs, but as far as this core group, this feels like the end. And whether that's a happy reunion and then we never see Alexandria again, or whether that's like a struggle, a fight to the death with the CRM and they all get killed, I don't know, but it feels like a finality.
My bet is that they end up at Alexandria, and if The Walking Dead are smart, they shoot a couple of scenes with them and Care, or like for the end of the Daryl Dixon stuff, they shoot a couple scenes of Rick and Michonne there at Alexandria with Carol and Daryl. Like, even though this hasn't happened yet, they go ahead and shoot this stuff while everyone's together and like under contract, and do like this big happy reunion scene that they can play at the end of whenever they get to the end of this fucking saga. And Maggie and Negan and... Oh, that would be weird. Rick and Negan seeing each other across the communal table, you know, like Glenn was always dreaming, or I think it's that. Yeah. And like I said, if they're smart, they will get some of this footage filmed right now so that they don't have to get Andrew Lincoln and Danai Gurira off the set of whatever the hell they're doing, and they just can do it. But like I imagine everyone will kind of like, they'll wrap up the Alexandria sequence with some kind of happy ending. But then I don't know where they go on with the world beyond and fear. And I hear that that's wrapping up as well. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I have no interest in the spinoffs that don't have anything to do with Alexandria at this point.
Well, you mentioned the Book of Carol stuff. And I mean, it looks like The Walking Dead's MO is a lot like Disney's MO with Star Wars right now. And boy... if you needed any evidence of that, the Book of Carol should be your omen there. And it should be a dark one.
Creatively bankrupt. Yeah.
Yeah. Their MO seems to be let's get, you know, our flavors all mixed together, right? Let's take The World Beyond and let's take Fear the Walking Dead and let's bring characters from this show over to this other show to cross pollinate so we retain our viewership, which is a huge
laugh. The problem is it's just
point.
Not, it doesn't. It just that's where I'm getting at, is because it just doesn't seem
that it's working. Like, we even talked about, like, it's not
an
unreasonable...
It doesn't work on the Disney side either. The Book of Boba Fett was a huge flop, you know? So,
but people did watch that because they're expecting it to be good. Like, I think The Walking Dead has now entered the, like, untrustworthy valley where just, like, nobody... Yeah, although I will say that it's hovering on a million people watching this show a week, and it's just, that's the thing. It's like, I it's a good thought that you scrape together all the hot coals of the Walking Dead fandom and you try to blow it back to life, and then you didn't try to push those coals around. But I just don't know that they have enough.
No, they just scattered the coals before they tried to reignite it.
But I don't know, like, there's also the AMC Plus trying to, like, I feel like everybody who's not, like, Max, Disney Plus, Apple TV, Amazon, or Netflix is just trying to position themselves to be bought by those other five. So, sure. Like, there might be value to propping up something for an AMC Plus subscribership that's not really worth it on paper, but they're trying to position themselves for, like, to be acquired, or the material to be acquired, or I don't fucking know. But like what they're trying to do is like use this as an event to jumpstart the franchise. Like, oh, what if we get 3 or 4 million people to tune in and then we can get them back into Daryl and, you know, then the walk. It's just clearly not doing that. I don't think it's good enough to do that. And turns out it's not doing that.
Yeah. I do wonder if this is going to be an indicator for them that this strategy is not working. Cause I think this is the biggest swing they've taken, right? Like, you can peel off Daryl and have him do his own thing in France. You can peel off Maggie and Negan, and those are big names, but Rick and Michonne, that's what it all comes down to. And for this not to find a new viewership, I think it's about time that they look at this with the really critical gaze and say, is this actually working? Cause it doesn't seem to be.
It feels like everything's coming together where they could stop after the next Daryl Dixon saga. Like, if they were holding out, like, okay, let's see if we can rekindle something. Sure. Or again, they could be just propping this stuff up and keeping some assets for value for sale and all that kind of stuff. It seems like they could do that happy ending where, like, you just have an end where Rick and Michonne are in this town square playing with RJ and Judith, and then I haven't seen Dead City, but here comes Negan and Michonne and Maggie walking in from the east, and then here comes you know, Daryl and Carol riding up on motorcycles, and then everybody
in
comes together
4 minutes ago, you know, here comes Daryl and Carol on the,
you could probably do all that, and, you know, Daryl brings his kid back and he meets Judith, and I could see it, it'd be cute, and that's why then they could just end it if they wanted to. There's done,
but the, like, only way they would ever end it is if they had some other place to put those resources, because they're a business, right? I mean, they're going to spend their resources in the most effective way they think possible. And if ending The Walking Dead is something they seriously want to consider, they need something else that they believe will be more successful to put those resources into. And I don't know what that is. Like, Shudder is probably the most interesting AMC-owned thing that I've seen. Like, as far as brand recognition goes, The Walking Dead is number one, and then Shudder is probably number two, and I don't know what else AMC really has going on.
What if a Mad Men spinoff set in the 80s? John Hamm ain't doing nothing.
All right.
Except for playing some crazy constitutional misogynist cop on Fargo. Like, he's just kind of like doing stuff here and there. Bring him back. Bring an old bloated Don Draper back to 80s cocaine sleazy advertising. He's trying to sell cigarettes to kid with Joe Cam. He invents Joe Camel.
Mm-hmm. My greatest fear is they talk somebody into doing another walk or another Breaking Bad spinoff.
Oh God, that'd be dangerous.
Especially because I don't think the Villigan or Thomas Schnauz or anybody who's involved in that wants to be doing that. So
yeah, but they could find someone who's not and would love to.
That's my worry, right?
But I think it's an absurd say to be like, well, they got nothing else to do because they're astute. I mean, that's what their job is, to find, like, if this property, like, almost anything they do could get 700,000-800,000 people watching it. So, like, try something that has a ceiling, because, like, if you can't get a million old school fans to come back for the reunion of Rick and Michonne, I don't know what the fuck you're going to do.
That's my worry, that they just don't have
cauterized the stump. It's bleeding. Stick it in that zombie's glowing chest and get it over with. Put it on the shelf.
I'm with you. It does feel like they've been trying things, but it just hasn't been catching the way that they want it to. How about let's move on to Bill? Bill S. says he wanted to like this episode, but he couldn't do it. Even after the beginning, you guys called where they landed in the water from the helicopter. Deny was too powerful, even with unbelievable dialogue at times, and Andrew finally rose to her level by the end of the episode. I think what he's saying is he wanted to hate this episode, but he couldn't do it. The building they were in reminded me of the facility from The Walking Dead World Beyond, but I don't think it was the same place. I wouldn't know. I haven't seen that show. I think Andrew Lincoln's greatest acting was premature ejaculation scene. All right,
Bill,
so people are reading
this.
We
are on the same wavelength.
But he wasn't sure either. He says, if I read his nonverbals correctly. I read them differently, but...
Where are you gonna trust on your sexual analysis, Bill? A red-blooded American male or this cyborg?
True. Yeah.
Who knows what his sexual programmed responses are? It could be data. It could be nothing. It could be anything.
I have the capacity to change my programming. Don't sell me short here. I'm a fully autonomous being.
Programmed to multiple techniques.
Yeah. Encyclopedic knowledge. Bill continues here. I refuse to watch the previews for episode 5, so we'll have to see if Jadis decides to come after them in any way. Even though the helicopter blowing up what was left of theirs in the building without looking for bodies does sort of give them an alibi. We'll see. I do feel like that's the most compelling thing, is they somehow drive across this entire damn country before Pennsylvania based CRM sends a chopper over to blow them up, but we'll see.
And Jadis, the other complication is she's transferred out to this Western outpost, so she's not even really back in Philly anymore. So maybe, like, even if she is inclined to not, I just don't see her not crossing the T's and dotting I's. Why not herself go and take excursion just to see, you know? But, like, I guess that's... I don't know how she would do that. She'd just, like, solo a helicopter to Alexandria and then be like, is Rick and Michonne here? No? You don't know anything about it? Okay, I guess that's cool. Like...
Yeah.
She just seems vindictive. Like, there was, like... I think she wanted Rick kind of as a trophy, it felt
oh,
like.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I can't believe they brought that, like, you know, her weird sexual energy back after so many years of not seeing it, but...
Well, she's been in the CRM trying desperately to hook up with people, but she's just too fucking
weird. Is that the world beyond was just her trying to get it in?
Trying to get
in
somebody's pants. She couldn't manage it, and Rick's so broken, she thinks, this is the guy.
And she just keeps getting more and more extreme with the haircut, thinking that's it. You know, it's the mom do. I got to change it up, look a little bit more edgy, and it just keeps getting worse and worse. And I can't. Ooh.
Yeah, you should see the tattoos she has on her ass. They're wild.
It's just a picture of her old hair. Anyway, Ryan J. Let's keep moving. Ryan J. in North Carolina says, I'm a longtime listener and club member, and I rarely take the time to write in, but I was compelled to do so after this episode. The power of Guerrera compels you. The scene of Rick breaking down over losing Carl for a second time hit me on an emotional level that I just didn't think The Walking Dead was capable of at this point. I audibly gasped, and it brought tears to my eyes. Footage of Rick and young Carl was really touching and carried many years worth of emotions with these characters. Whoever wrote that scene deserves to be celebrated. I won't beat a dead horse, but this is another bittersweet reminder of the what could have been with Carl in this franchise. I enjoyed the rest of the episode, even it struck me as Marriage Story Zombie Edition. That is I actually had that reference in my notes, but it got lost in the
marriage
sauce.
Story,
is a really fucking good good comparison, man. Yep. Just needed Rick to beat on the wall a couple times with his giant rubber dong. Can't wait to see what they throw at us in the last two episodes. So it's funny because I did get emotionally affected by some stuff in Daryl Dixon. I got a little teary-eyed, I guess, when Michonne and Rick first got together a couple episodes back. This episode I just thought was good. It didn't the Carl stuff almost got there, especially the scene of him as a little boy, like when Riggs was just real little and they're holding hands walking down the road, and then Carl just disappears. They digitally removed him. I thought that was pretty effective, but it didn't quite get me like I think it did you, which is too bad because obviously that was a goal. What about you? What was your emotional level on?
Yeah, it hasn't gotten me really as effectively as some things, but it was very emotional. I felt it. It wasn't like enough to bring me to tears, but definitely it had a charge to it.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll see if they can really bring out the big guns in the next two episodes. Because, there isn't. It seems like there's a lot for them to do. Only because I presume the CRM, I presume they're going to, there's a couple presumptions I'm making, going back to the guy asking us where we think this is going. They are going to they're going to deal with the CRM. They're going to get back to Alexandria, and there's going to be a definitive endpoint. Like, you're not going to be asking, I wonder when Rick and Michonne part two is coming out. Those assumptions could not be true, and if so, then but like I in fact maybe they're not going to be, because I just can't see, unless they just ignore the CRM and it's a traveling show for them going away back to Alexandria, I don't see how they deal with all that stuff. Like, Rick and Michonne alone on the road going to take down the CRM, maybe take down Jadis.
That's the thing, I don't even think they could imply that the Commonwealth brings safety, because like the Commonwealth wasn't as militarized. They had their stormtroopers, but they didn't have massive numbers of trucks and helicopters and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I don't even think that provides a military safety from the CRM.
No, I don't think the Commonwealth can stand. I mean, they just fucking bomb the city with gas and it'd be over, right?
Yeah, you'd think so.
Yeah. I don't know. That's kind of the shape I see it going in. But also, I don't know. They might, like, I keep on thinking, well, why the hell you hire Terry O'Quinn to do so little? But maybe they're like, if this goes out well, they're planning on doing a Walking Dead echelon, where it's like some kind of weird tense spy thriller, political thriller, which actually kind of sounds cool with Thorne. They built up Thorne into a main character, and she's trying to carry the thing of Okafor, but also trying to keep Terry O'Quinn from finding out she's got divided loyalties, and that might be cool.
Yeah, Tango Whiskey Delta. The Walking Dead Tango Whiskey Delta.
The thing is like, even with a cool concept, I just don't trust any of, because this honestly, what's wrong with this season, and I think this episode is a pretty good one in isolation, is that they just got the same fucking people. Like, the Kang crew, and I guess the Daryl Dixon crew, are the ones that I trust at this point. And the Scott Gimple mainline Walking Dead crew, the Matthew Negrete and all those, I just do not trust them with anything. With no amount of budget, with no amount of acting talent, with no amount of cool setup, I just don't see it, man. I don't see it. They got the sights, what is the saddest touch, the opposite of the Midas touch, where everything you turn turns to shit instead of gold.
Sure.
Saddam touch. Anyway, that's it for The Walking Dead, TWD at baldmove.com. If you'd like to get in some more feedback, don't forget to follow us on social media at baldmove for updates to what we're doing. And support us, support.baldmove.com. If you like what we're doing and you want more of it and you want less ads, support.baldmove.com. That's going to be it for us this week. We will rejoin us next week when we see what happens in Chapter 5 of Rick and Michonne, The Adventures of Rick and Michonne, The Ones Who Live. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.